As a non-commercial educational radio station, KZSC supports the free expression of ideas. Please be aware that the opinions expressed are those of the speakers or artists only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the UC Regents, KZSC staff, management, or underwriters. We welcome your feedback on our programming. Please direct your comments to the Program Review Committee at 831-459-4726 or by email at prc@kzsc.org. On May 13, 2020, we spoke with Dr. Owen Williams, lecturer in International Relations and Global Security at the University of Leeds, and a former senior research fellow at the University of Queensland. Dr. Williams is a political economist of global health, who focuses on health policy and intellectual property rights, as well as access to medicines. We talked about his COVID Diaries project, the privatization of the aged care sector, the pandemic as a crisis of capitalism, and the necessity for universal health coverage policies. Though much time has passed and the pandemic has evolved, we hope to think together with our listeners about which of Dr. Williams' thoughts and predictions have been accurate and useful, and which parts we all need to think anew. We also want to take a moment to mention another project before we commence with our interview. The Science and Justice Research Center is co-sponsoring a project with the Center for Public Philosophy at UC Santa Cruz to create a deck of playing cards that will catalyze conversations about ethics and technology. Cards will not tell players what to think. They are a playful way to stimulate dialogue on some of the critical issues we need to face. If there's a question about tech and ethics or social justice or individual rights that you think is urgent or particularly troubling, submit your ideas to techfutures52@ucsc.edu by December 1st to receive a pack of cards.
Can you tell us a bit about the COVID-19 diaries? Like, how did these projects take shape? What inspired you to create this diary series?
I've always been interested in sociology, and in I think one of the key developments and some of the best work in global health to emerge in the last 10 years has been from people who are either working in sociology and anthropology or have been influenced by some really cool methodologies in anthropology, especially such as autoethnography and ethnography. And IR, international relations, when it's looked at health, it's not a universal criticism, because it's certainly not true of all my colleagues, but it got caught up in really kind of boring, formulaic work that doesn't engage with real people and real stories. Kind of like a view of global health and the world from 30,000 feet. I think one motivation for me was, in all honesty, having worked for the last 5 years with people who are socially marginalized, either HIV infected or men who have sex with men, gay men who are marginalized. That experience taught me the value of that kind of, not the view from 30,000 feet, but the view on the ground, could inform your view of from 30,000 feet. On the train back from York on the 27th of February, I looked at all the notes that I'd taken from my presentation to prepare for a speech on the international politics of COVID, and thought, hey, why don't I just keep going? Because they were like dated day by day. And so I had about, started it on the 12th of February, gave the talk on the 27th, and then just kept going. And in all honesty, as the crisis deepened, it started out as kind of a bit of autoethnography and therapy, but then morphed into, drifted into a bit more analytical, professional commentary. In all truth, the self-reflection has disappeared, and the academic side of it has got more apparent. I flew to Australia for lockdown on the 17th of March, and on the plane thought I should open this up and make it a kind of get a bit modern and make it a kind of open source platform for, you know, whoever wanted to join. I mean, mainly colleagues working in international politics and global health, but also whoever really wanted to vent and swear and do whatever. And so that's where it's come from.
Thank you so much for that. So there's obviously a lot happening right now. There's so many diverse issues. How have you been choosing what to respond to? In other words, what's guiding your COVID-19 response in terms of where you're choosing to focus your time and energy?
I mean, I guess, you know, really the thing that always guides my work is what I get angry about. You know, so I guess really where it's drifted now is into analysis of a number of things. So one is how COVID has exposed neoliberalism and its interaction with a virus, a pandemic, and all the multiple ways that neoliberalism is interacting very aggressively with COVID. I think then the second thing, which is kind of the other side of the coin, is looking at how COVID has exposed the fragility of our faith, not my faith, but our collective faith in the market as a means of distributing and allocating resources. And really how the examples are too numerous to list, how we've seen routine mass market failure. So I started out last week with a piece I wrote, three pieces on how privatized aged care in any number of countries, but OECD countries, not poor countries, how our aged care had completely collapsed. Private aged care had completely collapsed. And the historical processes behind turning aged care into a private business sector, and how the aged care had become financialized and subject to investment by hedge funds and big investment firms like Blackstone in New York, and how the workers in aged care had become more precarious, less trained, zero-hour contracts, highly gendered and marginalized in the United States, in the UK, in Italy, in Spain, and how the ultimate expression of market failure has been abandoned care homes. And then there's other examples that I'm going to add to that, like the food system, the failure of private hospital care, and then vaccines and the and PPE and the precarity of the global medicines market will be added to that. I've already done the vaccines, and I'm going to do something on PPE and other medical technologies. They're the two things: neoliberalism, which I'm working on now, and market failure. I'm a political economist, so, you know, and I'm a Marxist. That's what gets me going in the morning.
Based on your work and a lot of other stuff we've been reading, is kind of defaults, the cracks in neoliberal capitalism have been showing very explicitly from COVID, from this pandemic. It's exposed the cracks, say, in the privatization of the aged care sector. What openings do you see are being created for something more just, more equitable for the aged care center?
Before looking at the positive openings, I think it's important to remember the negatives.
Okay.
You know, and for me, the negatives in broad geo, in global terms, are fivefold. The first is that we could end up where COVID, by a number of shocks, reproduces and exacerbates poverty globally. That's not even a possibility. That's already emerging. You know, 2 billion people worldwide work in the informal economy. That's collapsing. We're also seeing huge falls in remittances globally. So people sending money home when they work overseas in more developed economies. And that is a really radical loss of source of income for many, 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 many people. The simplest one is mass and long-term. Another one, the third, is mass and long-term unemployment. The fourth is the likely response that is being indicated that we continue to be path dependent in our response to an economic and pandemic shock. And the response is a default return to what we've been doing in the last four decades, which is austerity. The fifth and the final one, and you know, a lot of this is focused at the developing world and middle income countries, is the collapse of the resource economy. So oil, natural resources, et cetera. Now, so the positive spaces are, for me, obvious. We've seen, let's start with health. So we have seen signals that finally the penny's dropped with the pandemic, that you need to invest seriously in health systems. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But we generally, in across OECD countries, and even in countries like India and Africa, in African continent, we've seen a real realization that you need a lot more investment in health systems. Otherwise, we're going to be back to square one when the next pandemic strikes. I mean, well, you know, this is the first of probably, well, there's always epidemics team, you know, globalization has made this happen. The other thing that I think we'll see is there's countless, there was, for example, a Europe-wide poll yesterday, which follows on the back of a lot of national polls, which is a lot of people are seeing merit and value to things like universal basic income and job guarantees. Because you need the safety nets that we've removed in society have hastily in many countries been put back in place. You know, the dole, as we call it in the UK, but, you know, job welfare payments, job payments, et cetera, The other opportunity is we've seen profound recalibration in how we value work and workers. And that surely should translate into a recalibration in how we pay and value that work. Whether that happens or not is another question. I think what we've recognized with COVID is that you need collective action when you face transboundary threats. And I think part of the promise for that is how we respond finally to climate change. That we have, because of the interaction between neoliberal governance and capitalism, and government and governance and capitalism, which have both become endemically short-term and unable to deal with long-term looming threats and issues such as pandemics or climate change, we finally need, I think, there's an opportunity for long-term collective planning that has been absent for throughout human history, but, you know, thoroughly absent, at least since the 1960s, you know, in terms of infrastructures, in terms of collective action, in terms of responses, in terms of funding, in terms of long-term policy for climate change and threats. The other thing about this all is I think the neoliberal heartlands are where governments have failed the most spectacularly. You know, the UK, the United States, Brazil, you know, all of these countries have unraveled because government and the role of the state has been so eroded. You know, the state has kind of effectively withdrawn many of its functions, apart from, you know, a loose hand on the economy and military presence. It's kind of withdrawn from so many areas of social and life that there's almost, you know, like the United States, even with Obama in place rather than this, the clown that you've got, you know, there's so little left of the state, being so emasculated, that, you know, the opportunity there for change and for the state to become a good citizen is readily apparent. And in lower income countries where the state is not, you know, is no paragon of virtue in many lower income countries, you know, the state has at least been present and capable of constructing responses in countries like South Africa and Philippines, in Vietnam, in, you know, you wherever you choose, there's been countries with very little resources able to construct coherent responses.
Slow start to your Mondays? Wake up everybody with Lux every Monday from 10 a.m. to noon. Whether you're zooming into meetings, cruising to a socially distant relaxation location, or hitting the snooze button, start your week with music by artists who are queer, trans, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. You might be tired, but Wake Up Everybody will start your week with some fire. That's Mondays from 10 a.m. to noon, only on the Great 88.1 FM, KZSC, Santa Cruz. Monterey Bay's undocumented workers are overrepresented in the service, hospitality, and agriculture industries, which have all been severely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. There are over 90,000 undocumented workers in the Monterey Bay area. At the same time, undocumented workers have been excluded from federally and state-funded safety net programs. UndocuFund Monterey Bay is a collaborative effort to provide undocumented workers and their families with a one-time emergency financial assistance. You can learn how to be a part of the solution at UndocuFundMB, all one word, .org.
So another question I had for you was, do you think that universal health coverage would be a possible solution for equal accessibility to treatment and testing for future pandemics?
It's the only solution. You know, it was the message that came out of Ebola. It's the message that's come out of this. You need universal health coverage. I mean, you know, the United States is the only major outlier here in the world. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, you know, your system, health system, I mean, even poor, I mean, nobody has really universal health coverage anywhere in the world. You know, there's always gaps in terms of, you know, whether it just be a country that where dentistry is still privatized, or, you know, where primary care is a private concern. There's always gaps in most systems. You know, nobody's got real genuine UHC. Something, you know, even Botswana's got something. You know, the United States is the dumpster fire here in the developed world. But, you know, it's clear that all countries need to spend more on health systems. Even countries where there's access to public health, it's not universal, and it's not coverage. you know, you got countries like India sending missions to Mars very publicly, but is only spending about 3% of its GDP on health. It's not enough. It's not enough. Most in sub-Saharan Africa, the highest spend on health as a proportion of GDP is South Africa. That's only 8%. And it's not every year. So there's a lot of money, much more money needs to go into health. I mean, the US though, to be in a situation where you've got, and figures mutate, you've got 30 million people uninsured, you've got private hospitals that are furloughed in this crisis, effectively closed, the nearest you get to health coverage in the United States, a viable system, is the Department of Veterans Affairs. You know, that's pathetic. And it's just been brutally exposed by this crisis as just being completely insufficient. And yet, you know, Obamacare, you know, was branded as a commie project. And, you know, that was what, you know, whatever you think of Obamacare, it was so watered down by the time it got passed that, you know, really, in effect, it was just some loose kind of intervention in the insurance system. So, yes, your question was, do we need universal health coverage? The answer is always yes.
Probably close off with this. What gives you hope for the future? How have you been finding hope during the pandemic?
About the pandemic or more widely?
More widely.
Well, look, you know, this is brutally honest answer. Mm-hmm. You know, the last, we routinely under capitalism have cyclical crises. There's too many of them to recount, but you know, we've had oil shocks in the 70s, we've had financial crisis in Southeast Asia, in Latin America, we've had third world debt problem in the 80s, and we've had global crisis of 2008, 2009. So these are just cyclical, these are routine. We socialize then the losses. But I think this is a major crisis of capitalism. This is really big and very profound, and probably the last major crisis that we had was the Second World War, like this. Now, one of the things about these types of crises is it's very difficult to carry on as before, like this after the Second World War, where governments instituted welfare systems, social insurance for health, free education, and so on and so forth. There was a new settlement that emerged from it. So my hope, and maybe it's a vain hope, my hope is that we are able as people, not as governments, but we are able as people to use our power to negotiate a new settlement for the climate, for the economy, and so on. And I think, you know, it could happen. It could happen. It's not going to happen under Biden, but you know, I think the social forces that come out of this, that are left out of this, are going to be very strong. There's a lot of good stuff going on. And, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of good community schemes across the world that have sprung up. There's a lot of altruism out there. There's a lot of recognition of the value of essential workers and workers. And I think that's good. That's good. That's tinged and balanced by signs that the default responses are looming. It's whether we let the elites get away with it.
Much has changed since we spoke with Dr. Williams in May. The pandemic is now in its third spike. The distribution of cases internationally has shifted to new countries, and importantly, two highly effective coronavirus vaccine trials were announced in mid-November by Pfizer and Moderna. However, much has also not changed. If, as Williams suggests, this pandemic has initiated a very powerful crisis of capitalism, what spaces, if any, have been opened up to build new global health and other institutions anew? Is universal health coverage in the U.S. and in many countries vital to curbing this pandemic? And what other solutions and ideas are required to meet this challenge? What can be done to ensure fairness and equity internationally during the eventual vaccine rollout? Thank you so much for tuning in to the Pandemicene podcast.